Welcome to Eco Living in Action, a half-hour sustainable living show with Maureen Howard. From making your own cleaning products to composting, recycling, keeping chooks and reducing your carbon footprint, Maureen and her guests will inspire you with practical, everyday solutions that make a difference. Eco Living in Action, proudly supported by Sustainable Dunedin City.
Welcome to Eco Living in Action. I'm Maureen Howard, and today on the show, my guest is Kirsten Kosh, a sociology master's student at the University of Otago, and our topic is upcycling in the clothing industry. But before I introduce Kirsten, I've got a notice from Sustainable Dunedin City. Now, this Saturday on the 18th of May, there's going to be a free sustainable stormwater workshop, and it's with landscape architect Nigel Cowburn, and that's at 1:30 to 4 p.m., and it's in the Dunningham Suite. So managing our stormwater is important as we move into a less stable climate where there will be more things, more drought events, more extreme rainfall, deluges and heat events. And Nigel's going to introduce the issues, and then as a group we'll look into site-specific Dunedin streets, so choosing three streets and look for solutions around them. So be prepared for an interactive local solution-based workshop that'll be looking at street-level change-making and the actions that we can take together. And this workshop is hosted by Senior Climate Action Network, Future Living Dunedin and Sustainable Dunedin City. So it's at the Dunedin Public Library, Dunningham Suite, 4th floor, 1:30 to 4 p.m. It's free, and if you want to find out more about Nigel Cowburn, you can go to his website at growplan.co.nz. So it is free, but a donation is appreciated just to cover the afternoon tea. So, and they do like you to register, so go to sustainabledunedincity@gmail.com to let them know. So now we're going to move on to the main part of our show, where I interview a guest each week. And this week our topic is upcycling the clothing industry, and my guest is Kirsten Kosh, who's a master's student in the sociology department at the university here, and she's in the studio to talk with me today. Now, every time we recycle, we often end up with something that's of lower quality or value, you know, so such as putting a plastic bottle, it could become insulation, or perhaps office paper could be recycled into toilet rolls. So upcycling is rarer, and when we upcycle, we improve the product and we're ending up with something that's of higher quality and value. So Kirsten's here to chat about what upcycling means in the clothing industry and how it can help reduce some of the waste in this industry. And we're going to talk about what's happening globally and locally, and what Kirsten would like to see happen. So welcome to the show, Kirsten.
Thank you, Maureen. It's great to be here.
And that was a very interesting conversation, interesting talk, considering the stormy weather today and just looking at all the soggy leaves and the filled up culverts on the walk here from the university.
Yeah, so we've had a bit of extreme weather today, really.
Yes.
We're not used to deluges in Dunedin, are we, really?
No, it just really goes right across the roads when we're getting it too. So that sounds really great for people to be able to figure out how they can manage their own waste.
So, but you also have your own passions, don't you?
Yes, I do.
And so you've embarked on this master's, and it's and the topic, it's upcycling.
That's right. Well, I'm looking at clothing upcyclers, textile practitioners who do clothing upcycling to design new clothes out of secondhand materials and discarded materials. So some of these are factory offcuts and things that there's only a limited amount on the roll, or the design's obsolete, so these kind of get given at cheap prices to people. But a lot of it's from secondhand shops, from tip dumps, maybe clothes handed down from other people. And when people start saying they use this kind of material, other people start giving them a whole lot of that material too.
Right. And some of this, the older stuff in particular can be really nice quality, can't it?
It is. Some of the fabrics are much nicer than the fabrics created today, or the fabrics that people can afford to buy today at least, like some of the old vintage, even from the 60s and stuff. You're getting really gorgeous georgettes and beautiful like fine wools and things like that that have a really good lasting quality, linens. But today you're getting some merino being made, interesting merino blends, but a lot of the synthetic and kind of rayon blends are quite hard to break down, and they don't have a long lasting quality as a garment either, because they pucker, they finishes on them that once they're washed, the stitching goes. Mm. The design isn't necessarily a classic that's designed to last. So we're getting so much of this build-up of kind of throwaway fashion in our local landfill, and we're sending a lot of it offshore to be dealt with, either as second-hand clothing to people who may or may not want it, and also some of it to be put into waste, but then it's mixed in with other waste, and what's actually happening with that waste.
Right. So for you, like, when did you just sit up and think, oh, I've got to do a master's in this?
Well, I'd been looking at masters on things to do with clothing and identity. This is my kind of pet topic, clothing, appearance and identity. So it kind of went from that, wanting to ask people about what their appearance and clothing meant to them, to actually seeing that there was this really interesting thing happening with upcycling and within the subject called slow fashion, trying to slow fashion down. And that these people were making, and they had all that knowledge about what clothes meant and why they were doing what they were doing. And I saw that as a great, it's a kind of a great tool to offset some of these things that are happening in the fashion industry.
Absolutely. No, I think it's a really important master's. I think it's a brilliant topic.
Thank you.
And yeah, so, should we talk about like what's happening globally first?
Okay. Well, globally, there's lots of movements like slow fashion that are asking all different points of the fashion industry to think about the speed they're making things at, the quality of the things they're making, and the conditions, like the environmental and social conditions of the workers in the industry, of the way clothes are being produced, of the way they're being sent from one country to another. So they're kind of assessing all the costs there that are actually already being equated, or the lack of transparency, so we don't actually know how they're being produced, and but also what costs we're willing to accept.
So there's people doing research on this, and is it people from external from the industry, like yourself or PhD students? Or
there's people from all over. Some people are trying to make industry changes. I think what I'm trying to look at is a group of kind of designers, but slightly outside what you'd normally consider fashion designers, because my definition of fashion designer is somebody who's making clothes and who has a practice, and they may be making for themselves or for friends. They may not be selling as a business where other people would consider them a designer, but I'm considering them a designer.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So globally there's stuff being done, and
about all these facets, about the sending things to different countries, about what to do within the industry, about how to get consumers aware, and how maybe consumers can help make that change. Maybe it's governments and mandating certain policies and things like that. So there's people looking at all different parts of it.
Mm. And so are there different theories around, or, you know, how it's we're leading down this direction? Yeah,
that's it. So the questions that I'm kind of asking the participants, who I've got about 12 participants in the study, 12, 13, and 8 of them were in the seminar, so I kind of know more about their work at the moment because I've just kind of got most of the first interviews going. But so I'm asking them about how their work sits next to the fashion industry and about the conditions of their making and how the ethos of what they're trying to set up with their thing, and kind of whether I consider a lot of what they're doing to be social enterprise and like a creative form of social enterprise, because they're doing it with this idea of the public good. They're not doing it predominantly to make money. In fact, most of their businesses, even the most successful ones, aren't really making a return for them to be able to survive. Mm. So a lot of them are doing it because they're very passionate about it.
Right, and they're all based in Dunedin, are they?
They're all based in Otago or Otago, the broader Otago region. Most use Dunedin as a centre, but some are from Port Chalmers, from down the Otago Peninsula, from Waitati. So some of them have more supportive local communities than others.
Right. And so what kind of questions did you ask them then?
I'm asking them about why they upcycle, what kind of techniques they've come up with, how they kind of see their work fitting in against this like fast fashion industry, and kind of what theories or what ideas they put their work forward as, like what words do they use to describe their work. But what I've been studying in the background is different theories that would affect that I kind of see their comments fitting into. So I'm thinking of slow fashion, which I've said is this kind of idea of like slow food, of slowing down the whole fashion system, and thinking about that whole global chain that we've created and how that affects global rights and global environmental policy, and how it affects people in the local, how do we survive as local people within a global environment.
And competing, are you thinking like competing against fast fashion?
Well, not necessarily competing, but as an adjunct, how do people actually survive and be able to critique or be able to do something that they find creative and critique these kind of systems, but still actually have the supports they need to exist financially? So are sustainable kind of creative jobs, are they going, or work, let's say, because I think what they're doing is work, but is it financially sustainable?
And are they connected to each other, these people?
Some of them are, like Stitch Kitchen, who are based in Dunedin, down in Jetty Street. So there's three participants who work quite a lot with Stitch Kitchen, and Fiona Clements and Fiona Jenkin are the two main kind of people keeping that going, so they're both participants. Then there's Desi Levisage, who's also very involved in Stitch Kitchen, and they've been doing activities about all of these kind of issues for the last few years, and it was their work that really propelled me to do this project. But then there's also Simone Montgomery, and she also works for Stitch Kitchen. And then we've got and she's another participant who was in the seminar. And then we have Eleanor Poletti, who has her own little business, Just Antalya. It's called Something Antalya, and I'm apologetic for not getting that name right, but she's based in the Queen's Building and has her wee shop. And then we've got Keska Zeitgeist Bazaar, who's out in Kaitangata, so she's been doing things with the Balclutha Stitch Group, our Creative Fibre Group, and with the Kaitangata Spinning Group out there.
And so are all of them, because you're interested in upcycling, and so are all of them engaged with upcycling, and at least in some part in each of their work?
Yes. Oh, we've got Kerry Mackay too, who I forgot to mention, who's out in Dublin Bay, and she works with the art department with Pamela Brown. So all of them are upcycling, but not all of them call it upcycling, they do.
Right.
So that's also interesting to me about what terms they give their work and how they see it.
Right. So give us a few examples of some upcycled garments, you know, that just so people have an idea of what you mean when we say
okay.
Upcycling.
Well, so for example, for our seminar day, we had Fiona Clements talking about Te Wari Whare Whakapo, which was a war on want, where she was using warehouse plastics to make a runway design, which was in the 2016, I think, ID Fashion Awards.
So when you say it's warehouse plastics, do you mean what kind of plastics?
She's using all the plastics from the warehouse plastic bags, the old red ones.
Oh, the bag.
And the plastic
toys
and things to make it part of the train on the back of the dress.
Oh, very good, yes.
Yes, and making banners from this thing to make the words War on Want. Then we've got Kezka Bazaar, who I said was from Kaitangata. So she's coming at it from street performance theatre and this music background. And she's recently, due to health and things like this, of people's other jobs that they had, they've turned to this kind of thing out of a way to find something that fits them with their health and what they can do. So she's started learning spinning and these kind of different fibre arts later on, is trying to make a business out of it. So she's spinning locally bred alpaca, beautiful, beautiful quality fibre, and one of the few things that she can get that is locally produced because of all these textile manufacturings being closed down due to the global environment. So she's making this jazz-style wool from it, which she's making booties for big kids.
And is there an upcycling element to that?
Yes. Well, for her, she's also using off-cuts of fabrics and things, but I'm also including, for my definition of upcycling practice, I'm looking at people who are encouraging others, people to think about the practice, who are making things from upcycled and discarded fibres, who are kind of going right from raw fibre to through, and who are kind of, so people who are doing this mixture that kind of encompasses all of these things, which I'm calling their practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I can imagine that, yeah, people are doing all sorts of things, and the upcycling's one thread of it, isn't it?
That's it,
yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, and then now we've got Fiona Jenkin from Stitch Kitchen 2, and she's really promoting the bags for good, where some people might think, oh, well, that's a bag, it's not really a fashion item, but to me it is, because any bag that you carry, anything you're carrying, is a fashion item. It becomes part of your identity, and and what they're doing with these bags is taking them to various communities and getting, taking all the machines and getting people to make them and put their names on them as the maker. And they're all made from donated upcycled materials. And Fiona's even making tiny change purses from the remnants of those bags.
Right.
For then for people to put their little 10 cent pieces in. So,
cute.
Yeah, they get smaller and smaller, the little pieces that are left behind.
Yeah. That's great. That's great.
So all of them have all these very interesting ways where some seem more political than others, and some are more to do with that theory I was, haven't mentioned yet, but this kind of post-humanist theory where they're moving away from humans being the centre of the universe and actually thinking about animals and thinking about the planet and thinking of humans as a causal effect in the system. Mm-hmm. And maybe a slightly arrogant one at that, where we've got the ability to make quite big changes happen to our environment, but we've also got the ability to change this as well. So lots of them are talking about wanting to live a more sustainable lifestyle, be able to be creative, have animals where they can make things from that and work with less. Mm-hmm. And so you've got all these really lovely kind of ideas coming through.
So do you see, like, because I guess there's several different movements, like upcycling, it can be about dealing with synthetic stuff and making them go, but also, as you say, like maybe closing that loop and getting them into more natural materials.
Yep. The whole slow fashion thing is a lot of using more natural materials. There's a lot of animal rights kind of thing, veganism about the rights of the animals in the production line. So a lot of people would prefer not to use animal fibres because of those reasons, but then if we look at the artificial fibres that have been created, they actually hurt the planet and hurt animals as well. And there's also the problem that you can't necessarily easily split fibres that have been materials that have been mixed. There's some people are coming up with machinery that can do it. In Holland, they're coming up with this big barrel thing that can take out colours. There's other ones that say they can strip back things. But then we have to assess what kind of energy are they using to to be able to strip them, and how safe is that? How good is that for the environment? So there's lots of technical solutions that are coming on to try and say that we can keep on consuming in the same way that we do and producing in the same way that we can do, but I'm not into the technical solutions so much. I'm into them as a backdrop, but I'm into the ideological changes.
Yes, and actually, yeah. So at the end of the day, I can put this old piece of clothing into the compost.
Yes.
And that the dyes and everything are not toxic either.
That's it.
You know, and
yep.
So it's all possible. We do have all of these things, don't we? You know.
That's it. Well, yeah. It's lovely to know that your clothes can actually dissolve, but
yeah.
People have been doing
trials.
They've been doing trials on synthetics and they just don't dissolve in people's backyards. So
right, yeah. So let's say we're to bring it back to the personal,
yep.
You know, and maybe, you know, so someone's listening and thinking, oh, like I'd like to be able to do some of this myself,
yep.
You know. Have you got any suggestions for them?
Yes, I have. Well, it all seems so big, and lots of people think, well, these are really advanced skills, and my participants, they have really advanced skills. But for me, I started out when I was 12 doing it, and I did it because I always got secondhand clothes and hand-me-downs. So my parents always shopped at the op shop, so I always look for quality things at the op shop. We've spoiled for choice, and then start mending, start thinking about what you can do to mend or patch, just little things like that. Even the way you choose your clothes and put them together, you don't need to buy new fashion to look good or to feel good about the way you present yourself. You don't have to love clothes either. You don't have to be into this, but for some people, I think it's quite freeing.
Yeah, I actually feel maybe it's because I'm getting older, but I feel that there's more flexibility now in what we can wear. Then, you know, like when I was growing up, it seemed to be quite regimented, the different styles. But maybe it's just because I am older.
It did. Well, that's the thing. I mean, fashion does offer lots of freedoms in terms of looks, but there's still a conformity and there's still a kind of a liberal... an economic liberalism where you can have the freedom if you can buy it. And that's the problem that I find with lots of these liberal arguments, is that it's all about money. So I can go and buy an eco this and eco that, that's made by the hands of very, you know, but I have to have the money to buy it. So what are the so lots of these participants, they're encouraging people to make their own as well.
Right.
And they're teaching and they're doing workshops. So it's actually all about the sharing. Of course they want to be acknowledged and need money to... for their thing, and actually these designs they're slower, they're more expensive than new clothing because they're that much more time consuming to make.
Yeah.
So that becomes another problem.
Well, it is, but it's the true cost of the garment,
yes.
Really, because
yep.
we have offshored, you know.
That's it.
You know, the environmental health and the safety of workers and
that's
everything,
it.
You know, their
that's
health
it.
And everything. And
that's right.
So if you bring it back home, yes, it is, but that's its true cost.
That's it.
Mm,
yeah.
So in your, if you could wave your magic wand, what would you like to see happen, you know, in this industry? Like, what would you love to see happen here?
Well, I think a return to the local is really good, to actually fund the local far more. I think a well-being model is a really good idea, and to think through what a well-being model would involve. So that's why I think I like to talk to people about their health and what they want, why they're passionate about doing this and what would actually be helpful for them to continue doing it, because they're not asking for a lot of money. They just want to survive and exist and be appreciated for what they're doing.
Right. So more people producing things locally.
Yep.
And get back a really healthy, I guess, New Zealand... New Zealand manufacturing of clothing here. Would you see that? Or
well, I do see that, but I also worry about Bangladesh and other workers and what's going to happen when their systems kind of close down. So I like the idea of a universal basic income as a following step, because I don't think even being given a tiny amount to live in, being told that that's all you need to live in that country, is an actual okay thing to say. And I am concerned about other people, so I think everybody deserves the right to have something that interested in doing and to be able to afford to live well or, you know, healthily.
Yeah.
And then I think the government needs the ability to mandate, and maybe under some global economic structures that we've got going, they don't actually have that ability to do that anymore. So I think all countries need to kind of assert that and work together to actually be able to ensure more environmental and social checks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that we've just, you know, with the drive with automizing everything and so many things, that we are kind of, we will at least be getting to a point very soon where we're, you know, being able to tell everyone they can get a job is a thing of the past.
That's right. I think it already kind of is. And textile industry is one of the few things that they couldn't automate because little hands do it so much better. Mm. So that is why you've got so many social and environmental ethics problems in the textile industry.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Oh, well. Well, so that makes it all the more important. So anyway, thank you very much, Kirsten, for coming on the show, and all the best with them finishing your thesis and
thank you, Maureen.
And your next adventure in life. So,
thank you very much.
And thank you for listening. This is Eco Living in Action, and I'm Maureen Howard, and today my guest was Kirsten Kosh, and we're talking about upcycling in the clothing industry and what can be done and what's being done. So if you'd like to listen to the show again, you can download it as a podcast on the Otago Access Radio website at oar.org.nz. Eco Living in Action is supported by Sustainable Dunedin City. So thank you very much, and I hope to catch you next week.